All right. I'll introduce our speaker today. I'm sure many of you know him because not long ago he was one of us, part of this club. Brian Lacefield, he's our state executive director of the Farm Service Agency for Kentucky. Spent many years in the banking business, most recently with FNB. Spent several other years in the ag sector for various other businesses. But he got a phone call one day and decided it was a pretty important phone call. So I'll let him tell you more about that. I won't ruin his presentation, but...
You're just improving.
So he's a Woodford County resident now. His wife and two kids, and everybody just welcome Brian.
Hey, well, I'll scoot this back so you can see. My remote doesn't work, so I'll have to stay a little bit closer to the podium. But it is great to be here and in business. I'll tell you, with government shutdowns, Benny, when she was setting this date up, I said, "It is great. I've got some other things I'll be doing in West Kentucky." Said I would love to be down here and do it. The only thing is, if we're in a government shutdown, I'm forbidden for doing this. And this I didn't realize, but I'm now, in a year and 4 or 5 months into this, I have more government shutdown experience than any other state executive director in history, in both duration, and this last one at 35 days, and in times. We've had three since I've been there. I'm hoping that's just a weird correlation and not any causation, but I don't think it is. I think Kentucky's kind of under the radar. But I didn't really understand what a government shutdown was like. Back the last one we had in 2013, I was working for Hopkins Elevator, and I just kind of thought they put a sign on the door and turned off the lights and went home. We had some of our guaranteed lender meetings scheduled that were coming up right where we would be working with the FNB Bank and the Farm Credit Systems and working with all of our partnering lenders. We had no way of getting word out to them that we were shut down and going to be canceling the meeting. This, the first one coming up was just right down the road in Lexington over in Winchester. And so I said, well, I'll just go over there and I'll visit with them and let them know, you know, what's going on, introduce myself to the bankers, and then just tell them. I said, Ron, you can't do it. I said, no, I don't mind to do it. They said, well, no, you can't obligate the government. I said, well, I won't turn in mileage or I won't do anything. They're like, no, and they wouldn't give me the rules, and they're real serious about this when you do it. It is a $5,000 penalty or fine for doing it, but the real kicker was the 2 years in prison. I just don't think your street cred in the prison yard would go that way. Well, you're sitting around swapping stories and you find out, you know, what are you in for? You know, grand theft auto, arson. Hey, I sent an unauthorized email during a government shutdown. So I've learned to take that very serious on that. But Kyle's right. I did on October the 11th in 2017, I got a phone call from the White House stating that I've been named the state executive director for Kentucky FSA. Now, FSA is an agency that I hovered around throughout 20 years, throughout UK Extension, throughout banking at different stops, and through working with Hopkins Elevator, but had never worked inside of. But it was a very, very humbling experience, very big honor, and I'm very pleased. This is Secretary Sonny Perdue. This is who I work for, kind of like Kyle and I at the bank. We had a lot of dotted lines. There's a few that connect Sonny and I to each other, but he is a fantastic Secretary of Agriculture. I can't say this enough in these type of meetings, to be able to work with somebody that I think is so qualified for this position. And this man, ninth in line of the presidency, it was last year at the last State of the Union, he was the designated survivor. And I thought that from an ag policy wonk, that was pretty cool. If there was a reset, we'd have an ag guy doing this. But he's number one, he's a Southerner. I like that. He talks like us, sounds like us, Georgia, Kentucky. There's a lot of similarities of ag. You know, they got peanuts, we got tobacco, we both got a lot of chickens. So there's some similarities there. And it's been the first time in 30 years we've had a Southerner in this position, but he's also extremely well qualified. He's farm raised. He's one of the, I think, out of all the secretaries we have had in agriculture, only three have filed Schedule F as an adult, and he is one of them. He's also a trained veterinarian, practiced for many years, veterinarian, also a veteran, and then felt the call for public service, was a multi-term state senator in Georgia. I like that multi-term, you know, they keep sending you back. It's a pretty good job evaluation. And then was a two-term governor for Georgia as well. Then after his time in public service, he started a global trading company. And I like to remind producers that as we're watching some of this trade negotiations work out, that this man sitting on the president's cabinet operated for years as a commodity trader. So he definitely understands what a global market that is. So that's all the pluses. The other thing, going to work for the government. I've learned that it's not always just the same way it was in the private sector. They've actually have used the phrase around the office that they've had to beat the banker out of me to try to get me a little bit accustomed to government work. But one of the things there is the government shutdown and what that's been like. But there are so many positives with the agency. And some of you may not be familiar with what the Farm Service Agency does, but it's one of the agencies under the USDA. And in the briefest sense, we implement the Farm Bill. You just saw we had Farm Bill passed. This is what we do. We implement this and to take care and distribute our programs and our loans throughout the folks across the nation. With the FSA, the actual USDA was created during the Civil War in 1862, but the Farm Service Agency had its origination as part of the New Deal project back in the 30s under President Roosevelt and came about throughout the Dust Bowl. And with this came the county committee that govern at for the regulates and runs the county offices for each of the county offices across the nation. There's over 2,000, but this is a unique feature with our agency. Is the landowners and the producers in this market are the ones that elect their representatives. So this really brings federal representation down to the absolute most local level. And we have, who are the Tree County, Jimmy McAtee and Shannon Perry are the two current representatives on the joint committee with Hopkinsville. And our mission statement is one where we are here to serve all farmers equitably and make sure we're getting our programs and services out to all producers. So something, I had somebody one time walked in my office and said and started to name the farmer. I said, well, no, our answer should be the same regardless who that farmer is, even if it is Alana Baker, my kid's sister there. But helping me with the state is also five other politically appointed folks that are appointed through the president by Secretary Perdue. And we're very fortunate to have this committee together. I did not have anything to do with putting them together, but I could not have handpicked a better committee had I been asked to do this. The administration sought out input from all of our federal delegation, from our ag commissioner, from our governor, from members of different ag organizations, all had input, and these were the five folks chosen. Now, had I been asked, I would have talked about what a big and diverse state Kentucky is. When you start looking at Kentucky, and I'm spending a lot of time traveling around our state, we are a very diverse state. Any of you have ever heard the ag commissioner speak, he has a line in his standard stump speech where he is talking about, we produce everything in Kentucky from apples to zucchini and everything in between. And so I got thinking one day when I heard that, I thought, I wonder how many different crops we produce in Kentucky. And I've yet to get a firm number, but I know through our non-insurable crop program, which that would encompass the majority of the crops, we have over 400. So Kentucky is a very diverse state, and we don't need a representation from that just are all from a handful of commodities. And that's what we have. But also, you know, from my offices east to west, we're 400 miles apart, 200 from north to south. And so we got a very big state. And the secretary and his team put together a very good group. Starting there on the end, here is Kenny Eimel. Norman, I don't know if you know Kenny. He's Farm Bureau gentleman president there in Greenup County. But he's a big horticulture producer, both vegetables and ornamentals, and brings a lot of experience there. Now we got another local boy right here, Bart Peters, that works one of the partners, Seven Springs Farm. But Bart and I share a very interesting history. My very first job with the UK Farm Analysis Program started when Ben Cundiff hired Bart away from Farm Analysis to come out and work for Cundiff Farms. So I replaced Bart at that place. Both of us are Caldwell County boys. He's just a little bit older than me. I graduated high school with his sister. But he and I have worked very closely since that time when I started there. And I can honestly say, and I texted him last night to see if he was coming, but I was even going to say it in front of him. But I can say it easier now that he's not sitting here. He, quite frankly, is the sharpest person on the implementation of the farm bill, to how it works on the farmer side of the table. And he's very humble about it. When I replaced him in... did you not laugh at that one, Alana? That when I replaced him at the farm analysis, I opened up the desk drawer, and he didn't fully clean it out. And there were some old business cards that were still in there, and they simply read, Bart Peters, genius. Now, I don't know if that was or whether he had them on his own. But then there's the secretary again, and this is Sharon Furches. She is our chair. She was the administration names the chair of your committee. And she is often introduced. I think... we were over in Murray last year, and they introduced Sharon as the Queen of Kentucky Agriculture. So that stuck with me, and so I've been referring to her as the Queen of Kentucky Agriculture in my stump speeches since. But her and her husband, Tripp, they operate a large grain operation in Callaway County. And she, brag again on her, she has most recently been elected second vice president of Farm Bureau for their leadership, the first female to be elected that position. She is top-notch and super involved in about every organization that's going on. Next is Brenda Paul. Her and her family have a large beef operation in Bourbon County. And then Tom Flowers, he's an aeronautic engineer by training. So when I found that out, I called him and asked. I said, "That's I have a rocket scientist on my state committee?" So I don't know about that, but he's now a hay cattle producer and a grain farmer in Shelby County. But each of them, and he also had a lot of experience in the private sector, so each of them bring their own unique talents to the committee. And I didn't realize this, they are only appointed on one-year appointments. So I had to give a progress report to the secretary on how they did. One of the questions was, do they show up for meetings? I thought, well, a year in, I probably would have let them know, I haven't seen them yet, are they going to show up? I wrote my letter, I let my executive officer read it. He said, well, it's a little over the top. I said, well, perfect, I nailed it, because I want to make sure they understand if these folks aren't reappointed, I'm not just going to be sad, I'm going to be highly disappointed. So they are great, but again, to have the West Kentucky representation up there with Bart and myself, I think is really good. They just have not historically had it. Again, the footprint of our state, we go east to west, 400 miles apart with 64 county offices. There has been office closures, as Katie's lost their office in the mid-2000s as it consolidated with Christian County office, but at one point there were 120 offices. We've seen slow consolidation over this, and that's where we stand right now. There's 317 of us, so 316 others beside myself. 69 of those are on our farm loan team. 216 are on farm programs. The difference between those and that are who all is at my state office. And then that county committee that I was talking about, we have close to 300 of those across the state. All right, well, real quick, I want to talk a little bit about ag, the numbers, the impacts of what you can see, what we're doing statewide and in your community. But this, right now, you look at where we're at in Kentucky, we have a lot of farms. We have a lot of counties and we have a lot of farms. Kentucky is number four in the nation in the number of farms, and it's just under 76,000 farms, right up 169 acres on average. And this is a trend we've seen just in the last 20 years, last 50 years, as we keep seeing the number of farms are shrinking, and the size of farms are getting bigger, and that's what we see. But we still have half of our state is in production agriculture, so that makes us a rural state by definition, and that half our acres are in farming. We look at ag receipts for Kentucky, over $5 billion. This is the last census. This 2012 was a very dry year, but it was a very good year economically. The census, they're still trying to get the data out. This is done under a different agency, the USDA, the Ag Statistics, and so when you get those census cards, it's very important to fill them out. So, and I've got good data I can stand up and tell folks about. But with we see a lot of crops in this part of the state, but we still are a bigger livestock state than we are a crop state, with 55% of our receipts coming from livestock dollars and the balance for crops. The livestock, again, poultry huge with this. We had our horse and beef cattle, very big beef cattle state. Dairy, we're seeing dairy are declining significantly. But on top of these ag receipts, these are gross farm sale receipts, but when you look at the carryover and the ancillary businesses that support our farmers, it's about 20% of the workers in Kentucky tied in some way to the ag industry. This is one that I think is fascinating, is when you look at the size of operations in the state. again, 76,000 farmers. And again, we're in Western Kentucky where the farms are a little bit bigger, the equipment's a little bit bigger. But when you start looking at our farms, over a quarter of the farms that reported in the census had gross sales of less than $1,000. Not a very big farm there. So going back to my farm analysis today, a 20% margin would be a pretty good margin. We'd take that right now, wouldn't we? Any positive margin we would take right now, I think. But when you're looking at a $100,000 gross sale, a 20% margin would be a $20,000 net income. Now out of that, you would have to pay both parts of FICA, you'd have to pay for your health insurance, you have to pay for, you know, that's a net farm income from a small business owner. Less than 10%, 6,300 of our farms had gross sales over 100,000. You boil it down, the biggest group that the Ag Statistics folks do is over 500,000. And a 500,000 in gross sales is not that big of a farm, but it's less than 2,000 of our producers. And so I just find that fascinating that we have so few that are generating big sales. But then you look at this number, 42% still list farming as their primary occupation. Average net income this year was $11,000 for 2012.
Define a farm.
Well, by definition, you had some sales. It is not necessarily tied to an acre size. It's not necessarily tied to however you want to define it.
If we lease land, it's a farm.
If you lease farm, it would not be included in the ag receipt. So it would be production ag. You're growing something, raising something, producing something.
Well, I mean, we lease it and they grow crops.
So they're counting it. Your farm is counted in their farm.
Okay.
That makes sense? All right, I'm not going to break down all of our programs, but we administered quite a few programs, price support, conservation, dairy programs, insurance programs. These are all on the program side of the house. We've got it divided into programs and loans. The programs tie a lot to our price support and our safety nets. In our farm program. Last year was $146 million that were paid out in just our direct payments through again, the big piece of these, our two biggest programs are the revenue protection programs through price support and then our CRP, which is a conservation program. Big thing was in the news this year, and it's kind of a funny story how it went. When I was Brian the banker, Brian the farm analysis guy, new farm bill would come out, I'd immediately call the local offices. I would want to talk to them, you know, what's going on, what do you know? They said, well, Ron, we haven't received training yet. We really don't know what's going on. And I kind of found that interesting. Well, I picked the absolute worst week of the year to go on vacation. So I'm in Florida in July, and part of my daily routine, that's been my routine for, I don't remember not doing this, I'm drinking coffee, and I always got my list of websites I'm looking at. One of them every day is AgWeb. I've got to look and see what the overnight grain markets did. Top stories trending in agriculture. And the number one that day was the secretary authorizes a $12 billion payment for this disruption with the trade that we're seeing as the administration is in trade negotiations. So I thought this is going to be administered through the Farm Service Agency. Well, that really ought to be something I should know about. You know, I'm probably going to get a phone call or two about it. So I couldn't believe I'm reading about it in the popular press on AgWeb, and about an hour later I get an email that the secretary wants to have a conference call, and then I got Michelle, the kids all set up at the beach, and I went back in, and I was on a conference call first with the secretary, very high level, broad strokes, then the undersecretary, then the administrator, and then I'm talking to my folks about it, and spent the day looking at it. But this program came in at a time where we saw significant decline in commodity prices to help producers. And it honestly is the simplest program I've ever seen the Farm Service Agency administer. You report your bushels and you're paid based on the certain commodities. Now we had, right now we were predicted, Warren Beeler with the Governor's Office of Ag Policy, he was texting me reading the same article, wanting to know, Brian, what's Kentucky's impact? What are we gonna see? I said, I have no idea. I've got to get caught up. But once I kind of started seeing the payment rates and where we were looking at Kentucky, we're projecting about $200 million. So I just told you on all of our other programs combined, last year we paid out $146 million. In this one program, we're going to pay out $200 million to producers. And it was a lag. You had to have your production in to see what it was paid on. But we had only 50,000 or 50 million paid out to a handful of producers by the time we shut down in December. But when we opened back up, everybody was lined up. And I explained to many folks, if a farmer is waiting on a dollar, he's got a dollar and 10 places for that dollar to go. Same thing with our market facilitation program. Folks wanted to collect it in the next tax year, because that was when they normally would market their grain, but they sure weren't expecting us to be shut down for a month, because they probably had Lori needing a payment made, and had a fertilizer bill they had to pay and everything else. But right now, we're up to, the sign-up is complete. That ended on Valentine's Day. So we will pay to 17,193 producers, and we'll probably have another 50 million that will go out the door here in the next little bit.
Just on grain?
No, it was paid on, all corn, wheat, soybeans, and hogs, dairy, and almonds. Those, and it's interesting, the rates. The payment on corn was a penny a bushel. The payment on soybeans was $1.65. Now, I have farms, I lease out on shares, I market my own crop, and last year I had corn and soybeans both that I had to sell. And I've got to sell my uncle's. He owns these with me. And I may be fine where I'm taking a price. He just tells me, do what you do with yours, Brian. So I watched it and was kind of watching these things, and this was pure dumb luck, because I did not know anything about where we were going with this trade. But I pulled the trigger and sold both of my corn beans prices I was happy with. I watched both of them decline about 20% since I pulled the trigger, because I like to point that out to Uncle, so the next time I'm on the wrong side, he'll remember that time I got it right. But out of that, they both declined about the same. But the economists are calculating that the decline in price for the corn was actually fundamentals. It was too much corn, not enough supply. The disruption in the trade was the cause on the soybeans. And so that's why it was such a significant payment. Same with the dairy, and the same with the hogs. No payment for cattle.
Now, is it based on last year's production?
Based on this year's.
Okay.
Based on the 2018 crop. I'm still in this year till we start planting the next one. All right, I mentioned we had the program side, the loan side. Now, the loans with the Farm Service Agency, we're not in competition with F&B Bank. We're a partner with F&B Bank, with Farm Credit, with any other lending institution. We are making loans to folks that would not meet the test of credit to get a loan with Kyle at the bank. We had historically been referred to as the lender of last resort, but we like to be thought of as the lender of first opportunity. Do a lot of beginning loans, and we'll talk about that in a second. But we loan farmers, producers, money directly. And we also work with a participating lender like an F&B Bank, to where we guarantee a portion of their loan, 90% guarantee on their loan. So they're the lender, they're our customer, and then they're working with the borrower. Our loans last year were right under $200 million. We were fifth in the nation in number of loans. And I'm really proud of our farm loan team that, you know, there's not a whole lot of things we rank fifth in the nation on. We're not a nice state. You know, we don't always get in that top five. But we are in the loans, and it's been a strong program for a number of years. The majority of our loans were directly to farmers, over 1,400 loans, $93 million. But the bigger dollars were we had 106,349 loans to our guarantees. We have larger limits on the guarantees, and so we're able to leverage and go further with them. We were first in the nation with our microloan program. Now, this is loans less than $50,000, have a little bit of abbreviated underwriting, and we were number one in the nation. We're in the top five on all the other categories, fourth on both beginning and youth loans, and then fifth on our veteran and socially disadvantaged lenders. Just what our existing portfolio looks like, $815 million, right at 10,000 loans on the books. Again, the bigger number of loans are direct loans to our customers, and then 1,600 guaranteed loans, $387 million. So that's what we look like in Kentucky. Trigg County, this is one of my favorite things to look at in a community, is to come in and look at where we've changed in just about 100 years, is to look at how many farms were in Trigg County in the census in 1909, 2,200 farms. 80% decline now, right under 400. The average farm size, like you pointed out, now the average farm size in Kentucky is 169. Bigger farms in West Kentucky, 325 on average there. But we've lost half our land and farms in Trigg County, 257,000 acres down to 128,000 in 2012. Now this is the one I really like. I wish all my grandparents had been loading up with more land here at $12 an acre, as today, $2,960. And this is interesting. I always want to look at what that is on the annualized return. You know, any of the bankers here got a guess of what, because
it's pretty close when I look at this in about any community I go to. That's a 5.5% annualized return on just the appreciation. So there's nothing there on the income you're generating on it every one of those 100 plus years. But that's a little bit higher, 5.5 here. It hovers really close to 5 whenever I'm looking at anything in our different counties. Then we didn't have these numbers going all the way back to 1909, so I want to shift around what years we're comparing. But in 1974, so this is the year I was born, 74, we had 2/3 of the producers were full-time. That was their primary occupation. We're still holding pretty close in Trigg County. That other part, especially Eastern, that gets a lot lower. But still 41% there. Gross receipts, $6.4 million in 69, 12, which again was a high year. It's $7 corn that year, $47 million. And then gross expenses, 4.9 to 46. Now, I like to point that out when you're looking at 47. This is great for a Rotary group to look at, $47 million in gross receipts. Now, back in the days when we had a lot of local labor, all your businesses were owned locally, folks used to quote a economic multiplier, the velocity of money. How many times a dollar turns in a community would be at 7 times. Well, that's very aggressive now. Most of the economic impact studies would show this to be 2 to 3%, but I like 3, so we can use that. But you think that close to $50 million rolling 3 times in the community and see what an economic impact is. And that's, again, gross receipts for farming, not taking on any value added. All right, Hopkinsville Service Center services Trigg County and Christian County. And this is your staff there. I could not find one without an elected official in it. So just for anything, Dan, in the media there, make sure, you know, this is not a Hatch Act violation. This is not an endorsement. He and I were just sharing a ride to an event, and I said, you need to stop in and shake some hands with our staff here in Christian County. These two gentlemen here, Randall Morgan, he heads up the farm loan side, and Coy Higdon handles the farm programs. They've been there since I moved in 2001 to Hopkinsville. They are tremendous mentors and friends to me, and do a great job. Because Trigg and Christian is combined, this is our biggest and most productive office we have in the state. And so I have put some staff there, and I've taken some criticism because I have added 2 more folks to this office. But I say, well, you know, they're the most productive office in the state. I'm not going to penalize them because that's where I'm from. So I told that my executive officer said, now, Brian, you're getting some real criticism about it. I checked my expectation at 100% approval rating at the door when I got here. I've got no illusion I'm going to make everybody happy at any point. But look at what our impact is in Trigg County, and I did pull these numbers out because everything's lumped together in that one service center. But last year alone, we had over $8 million in program payments that went into Trigg County out of this office. Now, that was a big jump from 17, where it was $2.2 million, and our payments were actually higher on some of our price support things for 17. But we had a lot more market assistant loans that year on the 18 side. 16-15, 2 down to 1 million on these, but we still had a lot stronger commodity prices, and 15, things were only starting to get bad there. 2014, this is a big number here, and if you look at that, and that one I had my speculation on why that was higher, and so I went and drilled down to see what the payments were. But this was the last year of the tobacco buyout, and so we had a very big about $1.5 million was paid out that year. And that was folks that did not take their lump sum on the front end. And we also had a former forage program that wasn't available anymore. So that's why 14 was bad. That's about $17.5 million that was paid out in those last 5 years just to Trigg County producers. Our impact in loans, it's varied. We've had bigger years and smaller years, but about $3 million were loaned out through the last 5 years. And these are both direct loans to producers. And then, honestly, I think it was a couple of my guarantees there were the only ones. It's pretty bad when you can look at it and you remember exactly which producer that was. All right, and the total existing, those were new dollars originated. This is actually the portfolio, a little over $6 million, 32 borrowers to 64 loans. So that's what we're doing in Trigg County. Now, the summer, I had a chance to go to Iowa to the Farm Foundation meeting and got to spend time with one of my idols. This is Barry Flinchbaugh. He is a professor from Kansas State. He is a farm policy expert. Lana's got to spend some time with him. She's chuckling. The commissioner and I were like fangushing over this guy. It's at this conference, we had four meals that we ate collectively, and the commissioner and I were on either side of him, three of the four. Now, why he is such a rock star, he has met every president since Truman and has advised every president on farm policy since Johnson, with the one exception of my boss. And I have asked him, I said, Professor Flinchbaugh, when you go see Trump, can I just please carry your briefcase and stand quietly in the corner? So I don't know if I'll get the chance, but this was in the time we were still working on trying to get a farm bill passed, and things were still moving along, and he gave his predictions, and they were pretty spot on at what happened. Now, the farm bill that was passed in December, this was a big deal because we had not had a farm bill passed on time since 86. It had been, most of the time we're working on a one-year extension or something else like this. So we were able to get a farm bill passed, signed into law. That was, from my standpoint, a very good bill that we've got. It's very evolutionary, not revolutionary, on all of our price support system. We increased the number of CRP acres, so more acres are going to be under conservation. We increased loan limits to work on both the direct loans and guaranteed lenders with our partners. And then also maintaining the crop insurance system, which really truly is critical to keep capital flowing in rural America. So I love getting to brag on Professor Flinchbaugh. And I was really disappointed that Bart Peters wasn't here, because I got this great candid shot of him when we had the secretary come to visit. Now, this was the first time a sitting secretary has actually visited a Kentucky state office since we've been here in the 30s. Now, I make it sound like I was able to call him and said, Sonny, it's Brian, we need you to stop by. Okay, he was in the area, and I said, hey, you've got all your state committee here. I have a counterpart in rural development. I was like, you got seven of your appointees here. But it was very good interaction, and Bart and the others were educating the secretary on what's going on in Kentucky. But the secretary gets it. When he testified to the House Ag Committee, he pointed out that we're seeing a 50% decline from our record profits right now. So we continue right now in agriculture to see a lot of challenges. Commodity prices are down significantly, while inputs have continued to go up. You know, there's not any input that's cheaper right now than it was a few years ago. And now we're seeing interest rates tick up. You're seeing continued costs to increase. More regulatory issues. Folks are working through their equity, trying to figure out how we manage, as I'm referring to it now, our fifth year in this three-year downturn that we were predicting. So we are continuing to see challenges. That's where I feel it's very important that we've got a strong farm policy. We've got these increased loan limits that give us some tools to work with when folks get in a situation that maybe even Marty and his team want to keep working with, but even from a regulatory standpoint, they say, you know, we need some reason to work with this. Perhaps that FSA guarantee will help them be able to get through this. The other thing that continues to be a concern is this average age of farmer, and it's so capital intensive to be in farming. How do you get this next generation to come in? And that's what one of the things with our programs are our beginning farm loan programs. And over half of our loans are going to help farmers get their start into farming. All right, well, real quick, I know you need to get going. I want to share a quick experience with my last trip. Norman, I said I'd gone a few miles since I bumped into you at the Farm Bureau Conference. But right after that, they brought myself and Sharon Furches, the state chair, up to D.C. For a meeting. And it's worked out about once a quarter I end up in D.C. for training or for something. This one was more, since they brought the state committee chairs, it was more just a fun trip to get to do a lot of things. We had a lot of meetings over in the old executive building, and in there is the Indian Treaty Room, and I was just blown away with opulence and everything there. You know, I was thinking, how in the world could you recreate this today? I cannot get somebody there to hang a flat screen TV and it be level. So I thought I couldn't imagine trying to put this together. But I did find it interesting that the number of Indian treaties that were actually signed in this room, well, it rhymes with hero. So, but it's a beautiful room and everything there. We had scheduled, and Norman and I was back and forth between meetings. We had to set all these the security clearance and these a week in advance to get in the room. We were getting no confirmation emails. I was so afraid I hadn't got everything signed up correctly to go to our White House reception that they were going to have. Now, they walked us out of the old executive building, and
we're right here next to the White House. And we've got, so I thought, well, I guess we just walk right over. We're with all this, the White House staff and everything. Well, that's not to be. They walked us about three blocks down one way and then two blocks down the other, and then we had to go through a series of security checkpoints, which was not surprising. I was expecting that. What I wasn't expecting was they kind of had us in phases. We had a group of us, probably about 20, that were folks that were with my group. And we were going into the second phase of the security, where you walk into a room that's a metal building. You got a door going in, a little ramp going up, and then kind of a longer building, then a ramp going down the other side of the fence. And I was watching as my people would go through, and I'd see them on the other side of the fence. Well, there's a sign up that said canine security in use. Well, I was the next one to go through the security. And I had the little mat like the TSA has with the painted feet. You know, I'm standing right on them. I'm trying to play by every rule there. And all of a sudden, one of the Secret Service agents, he pushes a button and just says, "We've got a dog set." Hits this button and just starts trying to make us move all the way and being pretty gruff and not explaining anything. We're just standing here thinking. And in the group, there was one 88-year-old lady who was the state committee chair from Vermont. And I thought he was going to run over her and trying to push us all the way. Now, we were right up to where we were going to go into the White House. And they move us back into the parking lot. You can see the White House right here. So they moved us a good ways back with no explanation as to what was going on. Now, everything they had told us had been, you know, you do not miss this appointment. If you are not there on time, you will miss it. And I'm thinking, well, pretty good chance we're going to miss this now. So finally, after standing there and getting no explanation, this guy's superior comes up and starts talking with us and says, "Okay, we've had a situation." Said, "We've had a dog detect something." And what we're going to do is we're going to bring another dog out. It's a very friendly dog, so don't worry, but he's going to come up and smell you. And if the dog sits, well, that's a bad thing. So that's why I now understand why the dog sits. The dog detects something. He said, "Now I have to ask you, have any of you been on a farm recently?" I said, "Sir, we all work for the USDA. I have a pretty good chance of it." And we all admit it later on back at the hotel, but we all were secretly panicking over what had we done, and am I going to be the one that keeps this group of 20 from doing it? Alana, I had a big group out to Joseph Sisk, him. And I'm thinking, you know, well, I didn't have this suit on, so surely, you know, it's not me. This lady right here, she is a huge tobacco producer in North Carolina. She said, we were handling tobacco before we got on the plane. This guy, he's my counterpart in Louisiana, and he had a duck hunting accident and fell in the water, and he was afraid he'd picked up something. So all of us, we wouldn't admit it at the time, but we were getting a little nervous what's going on. So we sat there forever. I'm smiles. This is my new credo and motto is, you know, if I'm experiencing something uncomfortable, it's just going to be a funny story later on. So I said, "Let's get a picture of it." So we're standing there. They finally bring this dog out. The dog comes by, and he comes up, and he's smelling each one of them. And you got to know this guy. He kind of tells him to look. He's a big personality guy. The dog comes up right beside him. And the only way to really say this in mixed company is the dog just takes care of his business, just right next to Craig McCain here, and then just kind of scruffs up and then heads off. So I'm thinking the dog really didn't detect anything. The dog just needed a bathroom break, and that's why it sat down. So then we were able to go in, and it worked out to be a real blessing on things. And I did. I said, "Craig, get this." I said, "I got to prove to my mom I did make it to the White House, so I got this picture." But then the rest of my pictures, nobody else is in them. I was the first one going through. So there were the red Christmas trees that folks either loved or hated in the White House. This one, and this has been through many administrations, but it's a gingerbread house of all the monuments and things in D.C. And then here's your Kentucky connection. There's always a Kentucky connection. This is my counterpart in North Carolina, and he and John Calipari lived in the same dorm their freshman year. He played baseball at UNC Wilmington, and that's where Calipari played his freshman year. So that was a real neat experience on doing that. The week I was there was the same week that George H.W. Bush was laying in state. I was able to go through the staff entrance and go view that. That was number one, the ultimate fast pass to be able to just walk through the thing. I was being escorted through there and ran into our governor and Congressman Guthrie while I was going through. And then to get up into the rotunda and see the first president that I was able to vote for laying in state in the same room that you know, every other dignitary that you've seen that has done that. And I was there during a changing of the guard, and that honestly made the hair on my neck stand up. So that that was a great experience that it worked out. I was able to do that. And here was the line that I was able to miss, and that went around seven times the Capitol thing. So that was about 9 o'clock there. And real quickly, I'll land the plane, and I'll take any questions that we need. Just thinking about Kentucky agriculture, I mentioned both our commissioner earlier and this Warren Beeler. I know he was our speaker a couple of years ago for the ag dinner we have in March. He heads up the governor's office of ag policy. So the three Kentucky agencies, we're sort of federal with the Kentucky part of it, are the three of us. And we all are great friends. We all work together very well, and we all have a lot of fun, but then we also spend a lot of time working on some of these challenging issues to make sure we're not doubling up on the wrong thing or make sure we're covering all the bases. And one of the most recent ones was on our dairy issue, trying to figure out when we had 20 producers received a letter from their producer or their processor saying they're not going to be buying their milk anymore. So we've got a lot of challenges of ag, but I think we've got a great team. And I threw this picture in here because I was hoping my little sis was going to be here with a lot of it. It's one I put in a lot of presentations because it represents kind of what I believe Kentucky Ag does. Is we do a great job in our state of working together. It doesn't really matter what jersey you're wearing. It's are you in this industry? It doesn't matter if you're competitors or not. But at this table, you've got producers. You've got groups from the commodity associations. You've got private industry. You've got government agency leaders. You've got Farm Bureau. And you've got some of my team here at the local office all sitting there trying to work together for what I think is the Kentucky farmer. And this is the ending slide in most of my presentations. And it's got some hidden Easter eggs in it I've never explained to anybody. But I'll tell you all who they are. Daniel Wadlish Tobacco. That's a Christian County producer. That's my corn in Ohio County. And that's Black Hawk beef right there because Alana couldn't text me a picture of her cows fast enough, and Brandon Oliver beat her to it. So there you go. That is a good West Kentucky slide there. But it's great to be back with my friends and to be back with Rotary. I've not changed Rotaries. I can't commit to a weekly meeting. So I tag along with a good buddy of mine to the Lexington Rotary anytime there's an ag event that I'm in town for. And I'll be happy to take questions now. If you got anything, we can talk after the meeting. I know folks got to get back to work.